What's going on, podcast listeners? Neil here for another episode. I'm here with my boy Ujval. What's going on, dude?
Hey, how's it going, man?
We're good. Good seeing you again, man. Ujval and I met, I think it was in Mexico City for the first time live. Is that right?
Yep. Mexico City. Yeah.
Yeah. Mexico City. And we connected again on Twitter and just been communicating there. And I thought you'd be a perfect guest for the podcast. Ujval's doing some awesome stuff, which we're going to dive into over here. But Ujval, would you mind telling everyone a little bit about your background, who you are, what business you're in, and we'll just dive into deeper questions after that?
Yeah, absolutely. No, thanks for having me on. My background is professionally, I started in supply chain, working at aerospace and automotive companies out of Michigan, from Detroit originally, and worked for 5 years. Simultaneously, while I had my day job, I had started in commercial real estate. Mm-hmm. Was buying up commercial strips and mixed-use properties in probably some of the worst streets in Detroit, probably in the country. And that snowballed into buying a sports bar, a gym, e-commerce FBA business, and so on. And finally decided, hey, I'm going to quit my day job. I don't need anything else. I've got four full-time income streams, so I'm good. And went off to Southeast Asia and said, I'm going to retire for a couple of years, chill out. And I hated it. I did the last 2 weeks and I was like, I got to be doing something. I got to be more active. I was just bored out of my mind because everything was streamlined. Mm-hmm. And I came back to the States and then eventually bought another company in Dallas, took me there, enterprise software consulting, then bought another virtual assistant business, and then came to Florida and bought some amusement vending companies. And so that's slow progression over the years, buying up real estate and small businesses and slowly growing from 5 to 8-figure businesses.
Dude, that's incredible. There's a lot to unpack over here. Ujval, how many businesses do you currently own?
I'd say technically 3. 2 of them are in one holding company. And okay. So 2 different industries, and I'm working on diversifying and buying.
Cool. So you've mostly gone into entrepreneurship through acquisition route, right? Like a holdco strategy, buying businesses. What is your strategy in general?
Back in the day, I honestly had zero strategy. I wish I had Twitter and all the folks like yourself in this podcast, because I unfortunately didn't have anybody to talk to and was just kind of rogue and just willy-nilly just buying up random stuff.
Buying sports bars, yes.
So back then it was just cash flow. All I cared about was the cash flow. I had my day job. Cash was coming in. I needed X amount of money through this business and this business. That was it. And technically back then I had, I didn't know what it was called this, but basically a holding company without the actual entity. I had mm-hmm. 4 businesses, or 4 income streams, my day job, 3 businesses. And I'm basically doing the exact same thing I was back then, but just at a much larger scale. And so right now I'm just looking for cash flow. I don't care about exiting. I don't care about selling any of the companies. It's just purely cash flow. If it makes sense to sell, I will, but I don't buy with that intent and never have.
Wow. So many times people want to buy into business because they think, hey, this is going to be a passive income stream. And most times I tell them it's not going to be a passive income stream, but kind of how you're describing it is you had 4 income streams, your normal corporate job back in the day, plus multiple income streams you created. Are these like quote unquote passive for you, or how active are you in the businesses that you buy?
Yeah. So every single one of the businesses, all 9 of them to date, have been active businesses that I have turned passive. I would say maybe one was semi-passive, which I turned into almost exclusively passive or hands-free. But I mean, a sports bar, as you can imagine, I'm sure you've heard stories where that's a very labor-intensive, active business.
Yep.
Anything, I believe truly, legitimately, any business can be active or passive. It's just depending on the operations and the systems you put in place, that's for sure. But for me, the way I run it and what I always tell people is like, how the heck did you manage a bar and you were in Europe or Mexico or traveling for your day job and you had the real estate in Detroit and like, how would you manage all that? Well, for me, it was always the mindset that I really, and I think it starts from there, because for me, I really didn't care about making every single penny from the business. Mm. So I did not want to extract and maximize my profits. And as long as you have that mindset, like, hey, I'm good with 80%, 90%, I'll leave some money on the table, you're going to be just fine. And that's going to allow you to kind of relinquish some of just being so anal on every single particular about the business, because you care not about getting a couple more bucks in that one business, but you care more about that second, third, fourth, X number of business so that you can have a portfolio and ultimately be chilling out like I did in Southeast Asia or today where I'm just kind of coasting. And so if that's the ultimate goal, then how do I get there? So my mindset was always, I'm going to turn this thing into a passive income stream for me.
Dude, I actually love flipping that. It's funny because you pretty much led with saying, at all costs, I'm going to make this a passive income stream and just keep building on it. So correct me if I'm wrong. Is this statement correct? If there was a $100,000 annual profit business, active business, you would be willing to take 50 to convert it to passive. And you're fine with that because for you, it's not an equity multiple. You're just doing it for cash flow. Is that accurate or not accurate?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I don't look at the hard numbers like that. For example, I can take you through the numbers of my little bar or my gym purchase. You know, yeah. That was making 40K when I inherited that business. I bought it from the corporate entity. It was a franchise. It was making 42, 43K. I took it over. I dug in. I was very active. So one little asterisk, I am active in the early days. So I get in there, get my hands dirty. I learn the ins and outs of the business. I know what I'm doing. That will help me later on. So I get in there, grind it out. I was in there for about 3, 4, 5 months and was making low 40s. And by the time I was done, after a few months, the next fiscal year, we were like mid 50s, you know, so we actually increased the bottom line, but I relinquished my entire control and management to the manager that was there. And so I powered him with a lot more autonomy, a lot more spending capabilities, just, you know, more personnel. And so he had the controls and he was the de facto owner, essentially running the operation for me. We increased bottom line from when I took over. No.
Okay.
But, no, I didn't. But he had, as far as control, he had the full autonomy to be able to do whatever he wanted. And I didn't really know KPIs and, you know, a full proper structure back then, but I would just monitor it and we would just keep in touch on a weekly or bi-weekly basis and say, hey, what's going on with this? What's going on with that? And I would just check in time to time, but, he was just running it. And this was a business that was 22 minutes from my house. And oh, wow. I purposely did not go there in person. I think in the entire year, I spent about a dozen to 15 times actually inside the gym. And I'm talking about including my workouts there sometimes where I pop in. So I purposely pretended as if I didn't exist and I was living abroad. And so when I did actually go live abroad, that helped exponentially because I've essentially been running the full operation as if I was living abroad anyways. And so, and I did that first with real estate. And so then I tried to replicate it with a business, with an active business, and it worked very well. So that's typically the operations I get in, dig my hands in, learn the ins and outs of the business, then relinquish control, put someone in place who has full control, autonomy, the SOPs are in place, and then kind of walk away and let them do their thing.
Damn. Ujjwal, would it be correct in saying if you were active, let's say in the gym business, it would grow more? Would that be an accurate statement?
Yes.
Okay. But you are actively choosing to say, I'm not trying to maximize cash flow. I just want to be a little bit more passive. Right. So you're okay with that trade-off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And to be honest, I don't think I'm necessarily I personally would be the best fit for cranking out a lot more juice in that business or any business. Mm. I think I'm best suited, at least my personality and my mental curiosity to satiate myself, working on a second or third or X number of business. So I'm just not best suited to crank out one individual business and go all in. Yeah. So I think it's also based on personality and the type of operator that you are.
Well, I think it's actually interesting about you, Javal, and I've always kind of admired this, is I post about online where if you look at your businesses, they're all in completely different industries. I usually people want to play safe and say, I know cleaning, I'm going to only acquire cleaning companies because I know how to fix it. I know how to make it grow. That's right. My niche. That's what I'm going to do. And they stay with that. And conventional wisdom probably would say, if you're trying to maximize equity value, if you're trying to maximize growth, that probably is the move. But on your end, I think you actively decided you don't care that you're leaving equity value on the table. You don't care that you're leaving cash flow on the table. Why is that?
Because when I die and I'm looking back at things, I want to know that I have tried my very best to satiate my curiosity. Mm. And I know that I'm going to be making a ton of money. I know it. We all will. And so when I'm looking back, even today, when I look back and I'm like, holy cow, you bought all those random businesses. You learned so much. You speak so many different languages with so many types of industries. You can relate to a lot more people, not just employees, but industries and peers. And so for me, that's exciting and interesting. Mm. And so that's what I love. And so I'm doing this purely to learn. And if I don't scratch that itch and satiate that urge, then, you know, I'm not being fulfilled if I'm just looking at the monetary value.
No, I love that, man, because it honestly, for me, it's a tough one to get over, right? Because you always hear like people say, hey, maximize potential. Like you should just focus on one niche and really, really narrow down. And logically, it makes sense. But I'm the same as you, man, where I'm like, I want to do a bunch of other stuff, right? Like, and it's tough because you always hear about shiny object syndrome. You really should focus on one thing. And I think there is honest truth in that for most people. However, on your end, you're pretty much saying, I'm in the business to explore my curiosity. That's primary goal number one. If I make $20 million versus $40 million, that's an acceptable trade-off for me. I'm still rich. It doesn't really matter. I think that's different 100%. From what a lot of people would approach business as, which my opinion, I think the way most people approach it is wrong, which is how do I get the most amount of money by far? The answer to that would be you have to be active in one single business and grow it to what's really, really big. It's the truth. But you don't need to do that. That's just what most people pitch is, oh, that's the way to do things. But to your point, kind of depends on your goal. If you want to explore curiosity, if you don't really care about having the max amount of money, then do it your way. Right. I think there's a lot of ways of doing this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Ujjwal, what are the, can you walk me through the types of businesses you have right now?
Right now, I just have a virtual assistant agency. We have all US-based assistants helping small business owners. Mm. And then another one is two businesses, technically two branches, but one industry. It's in the amusement vending sector. So if you think of jukeboxes, arcade games, shooting games, racing games, ATM machines, things like that, I own all the assets and I keep them at bars, restaurants, movie theaters, clubs, and do a 50-50 profit share on the equipment.
Wow. How did you find these businesses?
The virtual assistant agency was on MicroAcquire, online platform, and that was bought that a couple of years ago. And then the other industry, I bought four, the first of which was lightly brokered. And then once I bought that, then just bam, had a bunch of other sellers calling me saying, hey, heard this kid bought you out. You know, can you give him my number to buy me out too? And so it just, word got out. And, you know, once I got into that industry and did well with the first seller, then, you know, I got all these other offers to buy out their companies too.
Got it. And I would assume like there's probably a size that you're buying at, right? Because pretend you buy too small, you're gonna have to do a lot more active work before you could turn it passive versus if it's already large. I'm guessing it's closer to the passive end and maybe you have to make some tweaks. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, how do you look at these businesses and decide whether it's worth buying or not?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting how my perception has changed these days, because back in the day, my first few businesses were five-figure businesses. Like I've actually, the enterprise value that I purchased at was five figures. Cash flow was five figures. And so, and I did that while having a day job, which I needed to, or I was only capable of putting in passive hours into the business. Mm-hmm. So the gym, the bar, the FBA business. And so, back then I did what I could. I tried to squeeze out as many hours outside of my day job to be able to afford towards that business, and it was fine. Right now, I'm looking at exclusively at least seven-figure cash flowing businesses. So I just looked at a deal that was $1 million in EBITDA, and what it actually cash flowed once I inherited it, put in management in place and everything, after CapEx and all, it was only going to be about $500,000-$600K. And I just, it was across the country. So looking at the logistics, looking at the trade-off and the opportunity cost of what I would be exerting into it today, it just wasn't worth it. So it's kind of crazy. Whereas back in the day, I would do it in a heartbeat. You know, but it's just one of those things where today things are different. I have to look at the opportunity costs and kind of the trade-offs that I'm having to sacrifice. And so right now it would be at least $1 million, a couple million in cash flow that would be needed for me to, you know, put in the management in place, exert 3 to 6 to 12 months of my life, uproot my life, move across the country or wherever the next business may be, and invest in that.
Gotcha. Into all the technical question. Let's say you want to acquire a business and they say, hey, I have $1 million in cash flow. And that is the correct cash flow for an active business owner. And you come in and you say, well, I'm not trying to be an active business owner. I'm trying to be more of a passive business owner. That means I have to do X, Y, and Z. And that drops the cash flow down to 500,000 or 600,000. How does the valuation change? Is that a negotiation, or do most sellers look for someone who's going to be active? And that's what the cash flow is based off of.
Yeah. And that's a great question. And, today, where the market is so hot in the middle of 2023, it's absolutely a seller's market. And so they have more capability to say, hey, I don't care. I mean, your other peers, you're just one buyer. All your other peers are willing to purchase as if, you know, with that 1 million as the valuation metric, as the multiple base. And so for you, if you're going to inherit it and, you know, cash flow 600, that's on you, because that's how you choose to operate it. And that is how I look at it, because that is the market that we sit in today. However, my valuations, when I choose my multiple, I'm looking at what am I going to assume the operations at. So that million goes down, take out CapEx, and then I'm putting in this software, that software, this system. I'm adding two more employees. I'm adding a manager in place to relinquish me of the full operations. Now I'm doing the cash flow further and further down. So I would be looking at that and saying, okay, I'll give him maybe a turn more on the multiple, whatever that number is, 1.5x more, 0.5x more, whatever it is, because this is a beautiful business and I can manage this completely hands off and cash flow, whatever, $500,000-$600K, but it'll be fully hands off. And what is it worth to me at that point? And I would have to look at the market valuations. Is there opportunities for me to be able to make that up? And so, for example, the gym business, what I told you, we took it over in the low 40s. We finished the year the next year at mid 50s. And that was with me going passive after putting in additional OpEx.
Right.
So as long as we can make it up through other means, like, can I backfill that revenue? Can we cash flow a little bit more? Can we increase margins in other ways? That's what I'm looking at. So instead of $500,000-$600K, can we get close to that million or exceed that by doing other things? So that's, and that might be not an instant operation. That would probably take a little bit of time. And so I all well know that as soon as I inherit an operation, it's going to decrease the cash flow just because of the way I run things in a passive way.
So you might give them a little bit more volatility because of that.
Right.
Gotcha.
After a couple of years, you should be back to that normal rate.
Gotcha. Very cool, man. Last question I got for you here. What's the goal?
It's absolutely just to learn as much as I possibly can. And that's the genuine answer. So, I really don't. I know that I'll make more money than I'll ever need. And so for me, it's just how do I touch on a whole bunch of stuff, buy a bunch of random businesses, learn as much as I possibly can, buy companies internationally, work with a lot of cool people, and just absorb as much as I can. So that's what excites me.
Very cool, man. Love it. Woodville, thanks so much for hopping on, dude. If people want to get a hold of you, message you, ask you about your background or whatever, how can they connect with you?
Yeah, definitely Twitter. I'm most active on Twitter. Just DM me there, or occasionally LinkedIn as well. So that's Twitter's definitely the best way to get a hold of me.
Very cool. I'll put Woodville's Twitter handle or X handle, I don't know what we're calling it nowadays, in the show notes as well. So you can feel free to just click that and get linked up with them. Thanks so much for hopping on, dude. That was awesome.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Neil. Appreciate it.
Thanks again for listening, guys. There are two ways I could help you out. Number one is with May This Franchise. If you want to get into business but don't want to go at it alone, we have you covered with everything from A to Z. Check out madethisfranchise.com to start your own remote local business. The next is with the Remote Local Blueprint, which is a course I launched to teach you the foundations of starting your own remote local business in any niche. It's do-it-yourself at your own pace, and you can check that out at blueprint.beremotelocal.com.